Democratically controlled U.S. House of Representatives voted to authorize a public impeachment inquiry targeting President Trump. This after weeks of testimony behind closed doors about his efforts to push Ukraine to investigate his political opponents. The votes were along party lines, with the exception of two Democrats who sided with Republicans in Mr. Trump's party. Meanwhile, a former top Trump advisor has been appearing on Capitol Hill at the House, or as the House votes to move ahead with the impeachment probe's next phase. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani.
Tim Morrison is the first White House political appointee to appear in the probe and could be key in the effort to impeach the president. A day after leaving the National Security Council, Morrison confirmed some aspects of earlier reports about the president pushing Ukraine to mount political investigations, telling impeachment investigators he had raised concerns. But Morrison also contradicted other testimony. GOP lawmakers are portraying his opening remarks as shifting the debate in the president's favor. Sagar Magani, Washington.
More provocations from North Korea as world leaders attempt to persuade its leader, Kim Jong-un, from engaging in any more nuclear testing and development. We get more from Reuters' Lucy Fielder.
North Korea fired what appeared to be two ballistic missiles into the sea on Thursday, Japan says. The two projectiles landed in the sea between the Korean Peninsula and Japan, according to the latter's Coast Guard and the South Korean military. Prime Minister Shinzo Abe condemned the alleged act, saying it threatened Japan's national and regional peace and security, and said North Korea's repeated launches this year showed it wanted to improve its missile capabilities.
That is Reuters' Lucy Fielder reporting, and this is VOA News. According to the FBI, the agency is investigating more than 2,000 cases tied to groups designated by the United States as foreign terrorist organizations. It's a figure that reflects the persistent threat posed by outfits such as Al-Qaeda and Hezbollah. The FBI's renewed focus on foreign terrorist organizations and their members partly reflects the quiet resurgence in recent years of Al-Qaeda. There are currently 68 individual groups on the U.S. State Department's list of foreign terrorist organizations. Islamic State has confirmed the death of its leader, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, meanwhile naming a new leader. This is days after President Donald Trump announced the terrorist leader was killed Saturday during a U.S. military raid in Syria. The group's news agency confirmed the death of the IS spokesman as well, Abu Hassan al-Muhajir, who U.S. officials said was killed a day later in an operation near Syria's border with Turkey. Hong Kong police fired tear gas to break up masked anti-government protesters mingling with Halloween revelers near the upmarket club district of Lan Kwai Fong on Thursday after a standoff lasting hours. Reuters' Lauren Anthony.
Tear gas was fired to disperse the demonstrators after a standoff that lasted hours. Many of them were dressed in black, wearing now-banned face masks. Some wore costumes reminiscent of the new movie Joker. Guy Fawkes masks were another popular choice. Shouts of "Give us back Halloween" rang out as police pushed crowds with their shields. Groups were penned in by authorities trying to keep the protesters away. Demonstrations have gripped the Chinese-ruled city for 5 months in a sometimes violent response to perceived Chinese meddling with its promised freedoms. The unrest hasn't just affected Hong Kong's streets, though. It has also hit its economy hard.
That's Reuters' Lauren Anthony reporting. A Turkish defense minister said Thursday his country is negotiating with Russia to return 18 people believed to be Syrian government troops. He said the soldiers were captured near the northern Syrian town of Ras Alin, the epicenter of Turkey's October military offensive in northeastern Syria. Turkey has since ended its invasion of Syria through two ceasefires brokered by the U.S. and Russia. The PAC's call on Kurdish fighters to pull 30 kilometers away from the Turkish border, where Syrian government forces would assume positions. Much of Los Angeles suburbs are under an unprecedented extreme red flag warning because of powerful winds hampering efforts to battle the wildfires. The National Weather Service created the new warning specifically because of the hot, dry Santa Ana winds that blow in from the desert and valleys. Firefighters say the flames are burning near one area in Los Angeles were about 40% contained on Thursday. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbatha in Washington. Today is Friday, November 1st. And here are some of the stories we are covering. U.S. President Donald Trump cuts trade benefits to Cameroon over human rights violation.
Cameroon is certainly one of the countries in Africa who has done a lot in terms of democracy, in terms of promoting liberties.
René Emmanuel is Cameroon's information minister. Mozambique's main opposition party says it is not behind the recent surge in violence in the country. Members of Kenya's parliament refute allegations they are the main cause of rising corruption cases. And tens of thousands turn out in Guinea to show support for a constitutional referendum.
The people wanted to show to all the country that in Guinea there is a debate. There are people that want to change the constitution to establish a new republic, and there are people that are against that reform.
Amara Sampare is Guinea's information minister, but the opposition says President Alpha Conde must respect the current constitution. And a former Gambian beauty pageant winner testifies before the country's Truth Commission. Those stories, plus Samson O'Malley's polls, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Cameroon's Minister of Information says his country is one of the leaders when it comes to promoting democracy and human rights in Africa. René Emmanuel's comment was in reaction to U.S. President Donald Trump's decision to cut trade benefits for Cameroon because of human rights violations. In a message on Thursday to the U.S. Congress, Mr. Trump said he was ending Cameroon's designation as a beneficiary of the African Growth and Opportunity Act, also known as AGOA, because the Cameroon government currently engages in gross violations of internationally recognized human rights. Separatists have accused government soldiers of burning down villages in the English-speaking provinces of the country. Information Minister Emmanuel says the U.S. accusation lacks objectivity because the separatists have committed human rights violations.
For the moment, I don't have anything to say as the spokesman of the government. That's what I can say.
Are you saying the government needs more time to respond to this?
Just consider that we have seen the decision or the intention. Well, let us look into it, examine it, and then maybe we may have to act. We'll see.
Are you not concerned this might hurt your country's trade?
Well, let us wait, and then I'll come back to you when we finish examining the decision and see, assess it, because we think that there are things which are said there which may not correspond to the reality, because we think Cameroon is certainly one of the countries in Africa who has done a lot in terms of democracy, in terms of promoting liberties, and maybe there is a lot of injustice against our country as respect of human rights is concerned. So I think we'll have to look into this decision, and then we will certainly have to say something about that after.
I think the human rights violations is about the crisis that is going on, your struggle with the separatists. Some of them have claimed that your military has violated human rights or has burned down villages.
But have people seen, if they are somewhat objective, have they seen all the atrocities which are committed by these separatists? Have they seen it? Are they blind not to see what atrocities these guys are committing? And I think it's not fair. I think there should not be double justice or double appreciation. There is a lot of bad things which are committed by separatists, and nobody condemns it. The humanitarian organization, well, they behave as if they don't see anything concerning all those atrocities. Our forces who are there to protect our citizens, they are there to preserve the integrity of the country. And they are there, I mean, because it is a duty for the state to be present and to secure the population and the state. So I think it is legitimate that our forces should be in the northwest and the southwest. But we don't think it is normal that our brothers and sisters are being killed by the separatists, and no one says anything. It's not fair.
Minister, can you bring us up to date on the dialogue that your government organized? Would you say it was successful?
Yes, indeed. The dialogue was very successful. A lot of our compatriots came. influential people came, they participated, they discussed, and then came out with pertinent proposals. And now we are waiting for the assessment of the head of state and the eventual implementation of these proposals.
Minister, thank you very much.
Thank you, don't mention.
René Emmanuel's Cameroon's information minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Yaoundé. Mozambique's main opposition party, RENAMO, says it is not behind the recent surge in violence in parts of the country. Local media have reported growing insecurity in several parts of the country, including North Cabo Delgado. The army blames last week's disturbances on militants who it said broke away from RENAMO. The attacks followed the recent general election, which outcome is being challenged by main opposition party RENAMO. Parliamentarian Jose Cruz tells viewers Peter Clotty that the government should bolster security to protect life and property.
As far as I know, at least, RENAMO is not involved in any armed attack. RENAMO residual forces, because RENAMO is as a political party at the moment since 1994, everything is well with us. We have no problem, at least from the military point of view, from political violence or whatsoever. We're not involved in any of that. These claims that there are RENAMO soldiers, RENAMO residual forces, at least people within uniform are attacking on the roads. We don't know of any of our people gone astray and doing that. But if they are doing that, they are deserters. They are not our people.
I understand a lot of Mozambicans have called on the government to increase security to protect life and property. What is RENAMO's position on that, particularly when the military is accusing RENAMO armed forces or those who were breakaway from RENAMO as being behind these attacks?
Well, what we would like the government to do is to step up the mobilization, the demilitarization of our armed people. If that is done very swiftly, in a very short time, then this part of the equation of confusion will be deleted. I mean, we will be in a clear. We want to be in a clear. We don't want to be involved in any of that confusion. It's confusing because there are many interested parties in creating this political violence.
Well, I also understand that RENAMO is challenging the outcome of the recent general election, saying the elections were not free, fair, or credible as the National Electoral Commission has it. How successful do you think you will be in your legal challenge of the outcome of the recent general election?
The announcement made by the Electoral Commission is not official, contrary to what has been informed generally. It's not official. That's only a commission. And the commission has no competence, no power to give the result officially. These results that worked out by this electoral commission were submitted to the highest constitutional council in the country to get not only the result that worked out, but also all the claims. Everything that has been done against the process has been submitted to this council. Now, the council has announced already that they are going to give out, they are going to proclaim the winner sometime end of December, around that date. Until now, all we have to do is to wait.
Jose Cruz is a Mozambican parliamentarian from the main opposition RENAMO party. He spoke with U.S. Peter Clotty from the capital, Maputo. Members of Kenya's parliament have refuted allegations they are the main cause of rising corruption cases in the country. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, the members defended themselves Thursday during the National Assembly inaugural public forum for committees.
Speaking in Nairobi, Kenya's National Assembly Minority Leader John Mbadi said that the members of parliament will fully focus on the needs of citizens. Mbadi says the members of the public will have a chance to participate in the parliamentary affairs.
That members of the public and the stakeholders will be appraised on the work of parliamentary committees, which I hope will elicit constructive feedback and enhance public participation in parliamentary business. I hope this is going to be the starting point to enlighten the public so that we stop hearing members of the public saying that MPs are paid so much and they only work on Tuesdays afternoon, Wednesday in the morning for a few hours, and Thursday afternoon.
Kenyans have earlier demonstrated outside the parliament building, blaming the members of parliament of greed, and that most of them have not delivered what they promised to citizens. On the other hand, National Assembly Majority Leader Adan Duale says that parliamentary committees have kept the parliament working for Kenyans.
Committees, in my view, have been the engine that kept this house moving. And in fact, was this house a ship? I would say the committees are the anchors that keep it floating.
Speaker, National Assembly Justin Muturi, however, defended his team, claiming that most of the members of the public have no clue on the functions of the parliament and that awareness must be created.
I can confirm that some members have faced the wrath of their constituents due to this general negative perception of parliament.
Tanzania's parliamentary speaker Job Ndumbai, who was in attendance, said that corruption is also eating into Tanzania's economy. The inaugural parliament forum for committee will showcase the committee system of the National Assembly and also clarify the role of committees to the public. The Kiswahili version of the standing orders was also launched yesterday Thursday and will hence be used during parliamentary proceedings. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, November 1st. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. Tens of thousands turned out yesterday in the Guinean capital, Conakry, to welcome President Alpha Condé home and show support for the president's call for a new constitution. The opposition says the president wants to change the constitution to support his suspected intention to seek a third term. Information Minister Amara Sompare says the attendance proved that President Condé is still a popular leader, but also that many Guineans want the constitutional referendum to create a new republic.
Roughly 1.3 million Guineans from Conakry City stand out to welcome the president. And they show again their support to the president Alpha Condé and to his policy. And what we can say more is the people that went out today wanted to show to all the country and all the international community that in Guinea there is a debate. There are people that want to change the constitution to establish a new republic, and there are people that are against that reform. But that is democracy. And the best way to decide which camp has to win is to organize a referendum.
So the purpose of this rally was to show the support for changing the constitution?
Yeah, that was part of it. I mean, the first thing was to show the support to the president, to show that the president is still popular to his population, is still loved by his people. And the second thing, to send him a message, to tell him that some people are against the reform, but other people are favorable to the reform.
I understand the president did not speak.
No, he didn't speak. He went straight to the presidency, but I think that in the coming days, he's going to make a speech to the Guinea population.
Because as you know, the opposition said that all they want the president to do is to make a speech to say he is not going to have a third term.
We're not talking about third term. We're talking about a new constitution. We're talking about establishing a new republic with new institutions that are strong and that are corresponding to the actual world.
Amara, to be frank, I saw the photos you sent. I must say there were a lot of people, but I spoke to a member of the opposition who said that the government forced the people to come into the streets. You offered them T-shirts for them to come in and welcome the president.
It's not true. We didn't force anyone to get out, and all the people that came out are willing to be there. But, I mean, we knew to that. The opposition is always trying to do intoxication, false information, fake news, and that is not a surprise for us.
Thank you very much again. We are always happy to speak with you, and have a nice weekend.
Thank you, James, buddy, and take care of you too, okay?
Amara Sampare is Guinea's information minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Conakry. Opposition political parties in Guinea say President Alpha Condé must respect the country's current constitution and be prepared to leave power when his current term expires next year. Tens of thousands turned out yesterday, Thursday, in the Guinean capital, Conakry, to welcome President Condé home and show their support for the president's call for a new constitution. Faya Milimono, leader of the Liberal Bloc Party, says the government forced the citizens to turn out in support of President Condé.
They didn't mobilize even 15,000 people, to be honest. And even among themselves, I have here comments that the president wasn't happy about the level of their mobilization. What I want to say is Guinea cannot be termed to be a demonstration of who can mobilize how many. What we want is to have young people at work. We want schools to be well equipped. We want the health system to give health to Guineans. We want roads for this country. We want electricity. We don't want that debate of new constitution, not new constitution. It doesn't take this country anywhere. And the president has started understanding that. We are calling upon him to say clearly he's going to abide by the constitution, and in 2020, he's going to leave. We need a new one.
Why do you think the government found it necessary to invite people to welcome the president after his travel abroad?
They wanted to show that there are more people supporting the new constitution than the one that we were able to mobilize a week ago. And they closed all the schools in Conakry. And they shut down the administration. Nobody went to the office today. And they weren't able to mobilize even 15,000 people.
Did you say that the president did not make a statement?
He didn't. He went straight to the palace. And many people assume that the president is not happy because the mobilization wasn't strong enough.
Thank you very much, sir. We are so happy to speak with you again. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. I'm so happy to talk to you.
Fayyami Limono is the leader of the Liberal Bloc Party of Guinea. He was speaking with us from the capital, Conakry. Gambia's exiled former president, Yahya Jammeh, has been accused of rape, among other disturbing allegations. Former Gambian beauty pageant winner Fatou Toufa Diallo told the country's Truth, Reconciliation and Reparations Commission that the former president used his beauty pageant competition to rape her. Pandera Umbai reports from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Fatou Diallo was barely 18 years old when she first met dictator Yahya Jammeh. She met Jammeh after winning the 2014 beauty pageant competition. The pageantry was sponsored by Jammeh, and its goal was to sponsor outstanding female students to pursue university education overseas. Her first meeting with Jammeh largely centered around her political affiliation and connections with the exiled diaspora and media.
On that day, he was interested in what I think about the APRC and also if my father was part of any political party. He was also interested in if I listened to Fatou Radio and if I listened to the Freedom Pandere, to which I replied to him that I do not listen to that.
Fatou Diallo had met Jammeh on numerous occasions. In one of her visits, she said Jammeh had proposed to marry her, but she refused.
I said to him, I do not want to get married right now. And it's not because of you or anyone, is that I do not intend to be married at this age. And then he said, there is nothing wrong with getting married to a man that is supporting you.
Jallo's refusal to consider Jammeh's marriage request had landed her into trouble. She alleged that she was raped by Jammeh when she was invited to attend an Islamic recitation feast at the state house.
I greeted him and he didn't respond. And he said to me, there were words like, who do you think you are? And that he is the president and that he gets any woman that he wants. He pulled his hand to reach out to me, like to kind of grab me.
Fatou Diallo went further to explain how Jammeh sexually assaulted her.
He said, let's see if you are a virgin. Swear to God, I was scared. And I started to apologize, to say that, please don't do this. I am so sorry. He held my face. He pulled his pants down and he rubbed his genitals in my face.
She said Jammeh appeared angry when he descended in the room where she was hosted. She also alleged that she was drugged before being allegedly raped by Jammeh.
Yahya Jammeh decided to penetrate me, but before he did, he took out a needle from his pocket and he injected me on my arm. I'm not sure of what it is or what it was for.
Dr. Lyman Cisse is the chairperson for Gambia's TRRC.
Today, we hear that the president and the commander-in-chief of the Republic of the Gambia raped a young and vulnerable woman in a state house. This is just not assault on these young, vulnerable women. It was an assault on the Gambia as a whole.
Fatou Toufa Diallo was a college student when she was allegedly raped. She is now using her case to spearhead a Me Too movement in the Gambia to combat rape and sexual violence. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pandering by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
It's 25 past the hour now. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin the sports in Yokohama, Japan, where all appears set for Saturday's World Cup rugby finals between England and South Africa. This year's final is a repeat of the 2007 final, where South Africa's Springboks won for a second time then. But over a decade on, the two sides are more evenly matched, having each won two of their last four meetings. Rassi Erasmus is South Africa's head coach.
Ourselves a chance. We've played England four times in the last 18 months. I think it's 2-2. The three test matches in South Africa and then the last one at Twickenham. So we're accustomed with the way they play. They obviously are much better than when we last played them. But, you know, we think we're in with a chance.
In athletics news, Geoffrey Kipsang Kamworo, Kenyan long-distance runner and world half-marathon record holder, says he has trained well ahead of the New York City Marathon on Sunday. Kamworo, the 2017 New York City Marathon champion, said training with world record holder Eliud Kipchoge has motivated him before he faces a strong field that is expected to line up on the streets in New York. The 26-year-old Geoffrey Kamworo slashed 17 seconds off the world half marathon record in Copenhagen last month after clocking 58.01 seconds to erase the previous mark of 58.18 seconds set by Abraham Kiptum in Valencia last year. In golf news, the 10th edition of the Entebbe Open got underway on Wednesday and is expected to also be a world amateur ranking event, giving an opportunity to Ugandan amateur players to improve their rankings. Kenyan's Justus Madoya grabbed a three-shot lead going into Friday's third round after he fired an impressive round of five under par 66 to jump to the top of the leaderboard with a two rounds total of six under par 136. But for Ugandan golfers like Herman Mutawi and five others who made the cut in this year's tournament, they are not just giving up yet.
As I made the cut, and I think I'm in a good position, I'm focusing to be the winner. So tomorrow they are beating me maybe by four shots, but 2 days to go. I'm sure I'll get those guys.
Although a Kenyan is leading, we still have a lot of competition. There's a guy from Zimbabwe who is neck to neck with the Kenyan. There are also guys from Uganda who have really done well. So it's not yet over.
And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your reporting on Monday morning. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Cameroon's Minister of Information says his country is one of the leaders when it comes to promoting democracy and human rights in Africa. René Emmanuel's comment was in reaction to U.S. President Donald Trump's decision to cut trade benefits for Cameroon because of human rights violations. In a message to the U.S. Congress Thursday, Mr. Trump said he was ending Cameroon's designation as a beneficiary of the African Growth and Opportunity Act, also known as AGOA, because the Cameroon government currently engages in gross violations of internationally recognized human rights. And that's it for this Friday, November 1st edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good weekend. I'm a sucker
for Hi, I'm Larry London. Don't miss your chance to get the now 71 CD, including some of the top hit songs of today's biggest stars. I can't write one song that's not about you. Can't drink. The CD features Billie Eilish as Bad Guy. So you're a tough guy, like you're really rough guy. Just can't get enough guy, just always so puff guy. I'm that bad type, make your mama sad type. Make your girlfriend mad type. Lil Nas X, Old Town Road. Yeah, I'm gonna take my horse to the Old Town Road. I'm gonna ride till I can't. Of the greatest hits. You can only get the chance to win by listening to Border Crossings. Tune us in every day at 1500 UTC.
It's Friday, November 1st.